You know well why you are here. Why you are sitting the sesshin. You have made up your mind to do what you came here to do. You are mindfully giving your attention to your own practice, the practice that you've been given. You are here now, throwing yourself into this one important matter, pouring yourself into this. There are three essential points to Zen practice. The great roots of belief, great doubt, great determination. These three things are absolutely crucial to your practice. It is said that when these three essentials are firmly established, your practice becomes firmly established. The great roots of belief, the first one. Great is limitless, supreme great. Profound belief, thoroughgoing faith, unflinching faith, belief which is beyond darkness, beyond being misled. Each and every one of you sitting here has this faith. Your roots are the roots, this is your root, the roots of your life is Buddha nature, original Buddha nature. Shakyamuni Buddha, the world-honored one, it is said that he was reborn some 8,000 times to practice the way. Some 2,600 years ago, the one who would become the Buddha was born into our world in human form, like you, like me. In his deep connection with all beings, the misery and anguish of others became his very own misery and anguish. He desperately sought to know truth. What can we believe in? What can we rely upon? What is it that will not fall out from under us? He sought peace of mind, great peace of mind, deep satisfaction, cessation of anguish, for all beings. It was to relieve the suffering of others that Shakyamuni determined to give his all. He recognized that knowledge of truth was not to be found in his everyday world, in his usual way of thinking, in the usual relationship between parent and child, or in the usual family life, in the usual feelings of love toward his child. Now all of these things are the natural workings of life. But Shakyamuni saw that it wasn't here that he could work through to find the truth. Why could he not perceive truth in his everyday circumstances? Because he had not yet broken through to awaken to the fact that life is in itself, always and forever, great peace of mind, all of life. In order to discover this, in order to realize this, he left his family, he renounced everything. Dogen Zenji would say, after his great awakening, after he had attained peace of mind, he would say, just cast away body and mind, forget about them. Dogen's eye was open, so he could see his way clearly to say, throw yourself into the house of Buddha. 2,600 years ago, when he left home, Shakyamuni did not set out with the benefit of that teaching. So first, he threw himself into ascetic practices. He continued that until he realized that it would not lead him to truth. He came to understand that no matter how far one subjected the body to self-torture, any peace which came from that practice was not a lasting peace. It could suddenly be taken away, lost. Great peace of mind is peace which cannot be lost, which does not crumble, which does not weaken, which does not falter. The one who would become Buddha fasted to probably the limits of fasting. And one day he was given a bowl of rice milk. Returning to life in a sense, that one bowl of rice milk must have shaken heaven and earth for him. He must have, for a time, experienced the contentment of life. For a time. Two bowls, three bowls, four, five bowls, that contentment would fade. It would be starkly obvious that he had not solved the problem at the roots. Knowing that self-torture was not the answer, not the way, Shakyamuni returned to the forest and proceeded to do exactly what you are all doing right now. He gave himself to the practice of Zazen. It must have been some 6 or 7 years after having left home that he attained, finally, profound enlightenment. The morning star was the immediate catalyst for his enlightenment. Glancing at the morning star, Shakyamuni's world changed. So that he could have said, what I thought is, turned out not to be, when that which I couldn't have thought showed itself to be. He was able to meet with that which is reality. He became the awakened one, the world-honored one. He had broken through the human barrier of intellect, the barrier of the human intellect. Buddha, life, now shone clear as crystal. Heaven and earth, one. I alone. All beings are my very own life. The beings are many, and all beings are my own dear children. Wonder of wonders, all beings are Buddha, endowed with Buddha virtue, Buddha wisdom. With his own great peace of mind came the realization that all beings are fundamentally complete merit, perfect virtue. All beings are ultimately at peace. What a wonder to be able to see this. All beings are ultimately saved. All beings are at heart in peace. All is inherently perfect. Nothing is in excess. Nothing is lacking. Inherent peace of mind cannot be lost or stolen or harmed. All is harmony. The limitless, boundless all is my reality. There is nothing which has to be changed. Nothing is lacking. Nothing is in the way from the beginning. Truth is everything, everywhere, all being. But because of perverted thinking, all beings fail to perceive that life is perfect. Because their eyes have not opened to truth, they suffer. Salvation is already theirs. It is only that they look away from it. The Buddha saw that there is no one to save. The job is done from the start. But Tentai Shaku pleaded with the Buddha to begin to teach. "You have seen into reality," he must have told him, "but we have yet to see. For all those whose eyes are not opened, for all those who still suffer in ignorance, please begin the teaching. Please guide us." Our bellies are filled with the sweet feast, filled just right. And yet we think always, "I'm hungry. I'm hungry. Why do I have to go through this? Why aren't things working out for me? Why does it have to be this way? Why can't it be changed a little? Couldn't it be better if it were that way?" How full we are with complaints. The Buddha could not leave us to our misery. He could not help but open the 84,000 Dharma gates. The 84,000 Dharma gates. I vow to open them. The 84,000 Dharma gates. Each time, each moment, each instant, each place, each circumstance is just the Buddha's blood. Each and everywhere, the Buddha's tears are raining upon us. Just in itself, the Buddha's tear of compassion. The tears of compassion rain upon us. And thankfully, mercifully, joyfully, we are able now, here, today, in this place, to know and appreciate Buddha compassion. Now and here, as we are, how could we look away? How could we involve ourselves in trivia, in complaints, in analysis, in thoughts? You must somehow be made aware of the indignity of trivial concerns. All beings are Buddha. Buddha virtue, Buddha wisdom. That is to say that all is, as it is, perfect. Just as it is. Nothing is left out. Nothing is in excess. Unnecessary. Just this is your belief, your great roots of belief. From the belly of life, you say yes. You believe that everything is Buddha nature. No thing is out of place. The story of Ubakikuta Sonja comes to mind. Exactly where and when he lived, the name of his teacher and all that, these things elude me right now. But the important point is never forgotten. Ubakikuta, the Sonja, came later, practiced assiduously. But he was as yet unable to attain peace of mind. He was still hauling around the heavy baggage of dissatisfaction and worries. Still, he had the great good fortune of having met an enlightened master. The The master saw that Ubakikuta was deeply troubled, caught up as he was in perverted thinking. The master must have also seen that Kikuta was ripe for awakening. So he demanded that his disciple reaffirm his faith. Your life is Buddha nature. You are one and the same life as Buddha. Do you believe this? Yes. All beings are Buddha. You've heard this from the beginning of your practice. You heard it before you ever took your first step of practice. You are the master, perfect merit, complete virtue. You've chanted the Hotsugammon repeatedly. From this life on, and in future lives, I vow to hear the true teaching. One with all being. Together with all beings, in this life and in all lives to come, I vow to hear the true Dharma. When I hear it, I will have faith. I will not doubt it. That. When you heard the true Dharma, you were without doubt. Upon meeting true Dharma, I will renounce worldly views and embrace and maintain Buddha Dharma. Yes. Practice just as you have vowed to practice. Body and mind, everything received, perfectly received. I will embrace and maintain Buddha Dharma. In so doing, the great earth and all beings together attain the way. Well, Ubakikuta, do you really believe? Yes, I do believe. In that case, follow me. The master set out walking, with Kikuta following. Kikuta had, up to now, devoted himself to practice. He would have been able to answer most questions asked him about Buddhism as well. So he must have followed his teacher with some self-confidence, some arrogance. After walking for some time, they entered the mountains. The path became quite rugged and steep. The way was rough, but Kikuta continued to follow his teacher, puffing and panting. The master led him higher and higher, where the vegetation of the mountain mostly stopped. Then to a cliff, overlooking a deep drop to the valley below. There was one sole tree clinging to the edge of the cliff. Now, this teacher had cultivated intense samadhi power, and he had the power to create these skillful means. He led Kikuta to the trunk of the tree, and he told him to climb. He told him that he would now test the strength of his belief. Belief in the one important matter. He commanded Kikuta to climb the tree. Kikuta did as he was told. Yes. The master had him climb higher and higher in the great tree. Then he told his student to climb out on a limb, a branch which stretched out over the valley floor far, far below. Kikuta did as he was instructed. Now, who was it who vowed at the start of practice to follow the instruction of the teacher? Who vowed to follow the teaching of your very own teacher without doubts? do you know your own faith to be firm, to be solid, to be unbending? From out on the branch, high up in the tree, Kikuta answered, "Yes, 'twas I who made that vow." Will you follow the instruction of the teacher? Act as you were told, practice as you were shown to practice, without a shadow of a doubt. Yes. Good. Now then, crawl out onto that limb, further and further out to the end. Now, Ubakikuta was, in a sense, losing it. He was no longer sure just exactly where he was. The selfish disposition was losing its hold. It is necessary, from a certain standpoint, to come face to face with dangerous reality. Now, hang from the limb. He did as he was told, grasping the branch with both hands, suspended over the valley. Good. You are minding well. You are listening. Now, let go of your left hand. Ubakikuta let go. He was probably glad to be right-handed, but he let go. The teacher said, "You promised to obediently follow my teaching. Now, release your right hand." Here there was a protest. "If I release the right hand, I'll fall, and I will be dead." Can you follow the instruction of your teacher when you're down to the nitty-gritty? Or do you try to protect me, my body? What are you fussing about? Do it exactly as you were told. Kikuta released his right hand. He awakened then and there, and he found himself back at the base of the tree without so much as a scratch. He awakened to find himself seated quietly. No matter how long you have practiced, no matter how many times you have reaffirmed your belief in the teaching, no matter how many countless times you have been reminded what to do, how many times you have vowed to do it, you just can't help but continue holding on to something. To what? To what you believe to be. To the way that you falsely perceive the world to be, is of your imagination. One who was an old teacher who became enlightened, said these words, "That which I thought to be turns out not to exist, not to be, when I met with that which I never could have thought." Thanks to the intense power, the great strength of his master, Ubakikuta was able to let go of that last grasping, that last attachment. When he let go, of course, he saw that there is nothing to hold on to, nothing to grasp. Ubakikuta Sonja awakened. Heaven and earth, one self, myself. All beings, my dear, dear children. This is reality. My lovely children, this is not made up. This is exactly what all of our great teachers have awakened to. They were able to hear Buddha Dharma and to courageously follow the teaching for us. They all practiced exactly as they were instructed to practice for our benefit. We are here with the benefit of their teaching, their guidance, ultimately one with the great earth and all living beings. The Buddha way is attained. Although my past evil karma has greatly accumulated, indeed being the cause and condition of obstacles in practicing the way, may all the Buddhas and ancestors who have attained the Buddha way be compassionate and free me from karmic effects, allowing me to practice the way without hindrances. May they share their compassion, compassion which fills the boundless universe with the virtue of their enlightenment and teachings. Buddhas and ancestors of old were as we are now. We, in the future, shall be Buddhas and ancestors. The great roots of belief, please strengthen, deepen your belief. Earlier this month, one parishioner died, one man who lives very near the temple. As an offering of protection, we held services for him. We chanted words to lead and guide him. I chanted with the prayer that truth might be revealed, even to some extent, that the sacred truth which permeates all being be brought to light. Great, vast, wide, clear blue skies. I gave him the name Zen Joy, original way. Zen, living this life straightforward, directly. Directly, nothing special, straight, one with life. No fuss. The joy of direct oneness of life. This is the original way, the origin. And this is just exactly the life that we are all living. The life that you are living as it is, failing to see reality, we are embroiled in anxiety and dissatisfaction and worries about the future, about our death. We're wanting always to manipulate our world. In this way you suffer. And not only do you suffer, there are always so many more who suffer even worse, who suffer even more horribly. The three worlds are worlds of unease, not worlds of tranquility. But we are not discouraged by the unease of our minds. Rather, we vow to do it, and we do it. We cast off body and mind, forget about them. Just set aside your body and mind, forget about them, and throw them into the house of Buddha. Then all is done by Buddha. Just set aside your body and mind, forget about them, and throw them into the house of Buddha. Then all is done by Buddha. This, just this, is what you are doing now, here, isn't it? birth and death, going and coming, all the things of this world are just this. Just this. But with our discriminating consciousness, we are quick to grasp this. We grasp just this as a concept. Grasping is grasping a phantom. It is of no use to you. Attached to words, to ideas, you've got less than nothing. So please forgive me for going on so with words. May your deep, deep faith in Buddha nature, may your deep faith in your own reality be the source, the basis of your practice. From deep within the roots of belief, devote yourself to this one step. Together with all beings, we attain the Buddha way.